I guess you need this. Hi, everybody. My name is Jason Rogers. I'm the lead program manager for anti-malware and advanced threat protection in O365. I've been working on O365 for, well, I guess since before it was O365, back in the days of BPAWS and Foppy. So I'm super passionate about security, super excited to be here to tell you about some of the latest work that we're doing with ATP. And Phil's here with me also to talk a little bit about threat intelligence.
Yeah, so I'm Phil Newman. I've also been on Office 365 since the very start. Between Jason and I, we have 15 years on Office 365 of experience. And I have a background in a bunch of performance and security and reliability work. And just a bit over a year ago, I joined the information protection team on Office 365 to start exploring the threat intelligence space. So I'm going to be looking forward to tell you a bit more about that later on in this presentation. So here's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the advancements that we've brought to advanced threat protection. We're going to talk about, it wasn't in the title, but we're going to talk about some of the new threat intel work that we've been doing. But I'm going to start by talking about the threat landscape. What are these threats out there that we need better protection against? What are tactics are attackers using to get at your end users? We're going to talk about the protection that we have built into Office 365, what is basic in Office 365, as well as what are the features that we've built in ATP to catch those more interesting threats that we talked about in the threat landscape. We're going to talk about how we have now a full suite solution for advanced threat protection that stretches beyond email into other Office 365 properties. And then we'll talk about some of the interesting insights that we can get from the threat intelligence that we gather from our huge aperture on the threats that are going on in the world, and show you some of the new investigation tools that we've built. So let's start with the threat landscape. So these terms are probably terms that you're familiar with, but I actually want to cover them real quick, and then we'll get into some depth on the types of malware attacks that we see. So phishing, everyone's heard of phishing? This one's pretty typical. I made this one up, but we see this all the time, that there's some message that's pretending to be IT, or it's pretending to be Apple, or it's pretending to be something reputable. Fill out this survey right now, otherwise you're going to lose email access. Has this attack actually hit anyone here? It hits schools a lot. And then at the bottom, there's a URL to something. In this case, I made it Microsoft, but this is microsoftit.com. Microsoftit.com isn't a URL that's owned by Microsoft, but it looks real, you know, so users click on it. But the thing with these phishing mails, they look legit. They have a sense of urgency, and they always have some lure that, and the smart ones are crafted in such a way that they are really attractive to the user and instill these other sense of urgencies. When we think about phish, though, we have an evolution in the way that we think about phish these days. We used to think of phishing as just, you know, some attack to steal a password, but the term phishing is now extended into every kind of attack, really, and refers more to the social engineering techniques that are used to distribute these attacks. And that actually helps us a lot with our protection, that we can actually try to detect those techniques and not necessarily worry about URLs or the malware. The next thing is malware. So malware is something, you know, it's a virus trying to do bad things to your machine. I have a picture of the kind of malware that we see in email here, and it's actually really hard to tell what's going on there. But if you look at it, it's JavaScript. The kinds of malware that we get in email most commonly are either macros or they're JavaScript. And if you look at the macros or the JavaScript, it's nonsense. If you look at this, it says, you know, it says whoop, pregnancy, muckle, you know, there's a bunch of random strings. But what's important is at the bottom there, and it's hard to see this, it does an HTTP request. So the whole JavaScript, all it does is in a very complicated way, builds out a URL, and then the last line of it downloads some secondary payload from that URL. Now, attackers have learned that most email protection systems in the past were very good at clustering on messages that had a similar signature or malware that had a similar signature. So if, you know, if they send the same one over and over again, it wouldn't take us very long to detect that it was bad and start blocking it. But now they've started morphing. The distribution systems that they use actually on the fly will change these attacks in a very dynamic way. And when you look at what it actually does, you can kind of start to understand that it's actually not that hard. It's not that hard to go into some JavaScript file and change some random word from one word to another and suddenly change the signature on the file so that you could beat your basic protection. So the last thing about these email threats is they generally don't use classic vulnerabilities like we used to speak about a few years ago. It used to be that, you know, some unknown, some vulnerability would become known and everyone would attack it, but we don't see that through email anymore. It's the phishing techniques that use legit functionality in macros and JavaScript and other technologies that really distribute macros these days. So the threat landscape is changing dramatically. There's still some, you know, in non-email threats, you know, in web drive-bys and other kind, you know, in those areas, the vulnerabilities are still very important to look at, but today we're going to focus on email security. The last category, which is new and, well, it's not really new and upcoming, but it's becoming a lot more popular these days, is spear phishing. And some people call this whaling or whale phishing. And this is, what's really interesting about these is that they exploit personal relationships between people. So with a spear phish, there's always some spoofing of someone. And we usually see, you know, CEO to CFO, CEO says, hey, you need to approve this wire transfer right now, take care of it. And they're short messages like you would get from your CEOs if they were yelling at you. And you know, it looks legit when you look at it. In fact, we've started to deploy a bunch of techniques in Office 365 to catch these messages. And we get a really high rate of people reporting that we are catching messages that are good when in fact they're bad. And we go back and we look at them. And we're like, that's not that person at all. It's not good. So these, even people who see this in their junk box sometimes think that they're good messages, and that's what makes them so dangerous. So there's this trend now towards more targeted and more personalized attacks where the attacker will spend a lot more time and a lot more effort crafting the attack and get a bigger payday as a result. And oh yeah, the last thing, there's no malware in here, right? There's no phishing URL, there's no malware. They're just really hoping that some action will be taken. And when we think about attacks now, a lot of people have this kind of linear view of an attack progression, that there'll be a drive-by or some email comes in and some link gets clicked and then there's some bad thing that happens. And that's an interesting mental model, but you really have to think about it as a two-dimensional problem. So on this chart, I have attack progression going up and down. So a phishing email starts at the top and stealing credentials are at the bottom, and stealing credentials is up at the top. But then as you go more towards the left, we're talking about attack severity. And there's a lot, you know, with the trend to go towards more targeted and more sophisticated attacks, you get this move away from the low severity attacks. I consider a credential stealer is a pretty low severity attack. You can reset a password and it's fixed. But the more high severity attacks, like at the top left, I have a database exfiltration. These are the kinds of things, depending on what kind of publications you read, cost companies between $4 and $12 million for every instance. Those are a lot more interesting. So the other things I have on here, you know, exploring files in SharePoint Online, that's an event that is related to an attack that is, you know, medium severity and medium attack progression because they haven't taken anything yet. But stealing files from OneDrive for Business is kind of getting up in the more dangerous, interesting part of that quadrant. So historically, you can see the yellow there. Historically, what I'm calling commodity malware and commodity attacks are the ones that I'm coloring yellow. They actually make up the highest volume of attacks that you'll see. They're usually high volume. They used to be less sophisticated. Now attackers are using even more and more sophisticated tools for these attacks. But what they're really trying to do is not do too much harm to your business. They might steal credentials or try to ransomware someone's computer and lock out their files. Then the next two areas are where it gets a lot more interesting, of these targeted attacks, that the attackers specifically picked victims because their target represents something that they want, or because they're especially effective, they have a lure that's especially effective with them. We see these kinds of attacks all the time where, you know, it's everyone in the Netherlands who has a LinkedIn account who gets these attacks, because at the end of the day, the payload knows how to exploit those individuals. And those are some of the more targeted attacks. We also see this trend that there's some attacks that are more and more targeted at individual enterprises, and those kind of fit in the yellow part too. And then the ones that are in blue, these are the super interesting and super risky and crazy ones, where, you know, we'll try to steal a database of customer information, or steal information from a file share or OneDrive for Business or SharePoint Online. And the one that I have at the bottom left, insider sells data. Has anyone seen the Snowden movie? Yeah, no? Did anyone know that Snowden was an admin on SharePoint and took documents from SharePoint? So that's one where he didn't have to progress, or he progressed fairly far in his attack, but he didn't have that many steps to go through because he was trusted in his organization. And when you think about the threat landscape, you know, it's interesting to think that all of these kind of fit into this continuum of risks to your organization. And email is one big vector that we like to talk about. But one of the trends that we're acknowledging in Office 365 is to get better coverage on this holistic picture of threats and not just the email vector. And we're going to talk about some of that a little bit more today. And it's actually one of the themes this week, if you're attending some of the other Office 365 presentations, where we're talking about our policy engine, how we're talking about how we combine document signals with end user signals and find anomalies in behavior so that we can color in more of the dots on this diagram for you and help you drive intelligent policy off of them. So the next thing I want to talk about is a very common attack this year. Who's heard about Locky ransomware? Who's seen Locky ransomware inside their organization? For those of you who aren't familiar, ransomware is a kind of virus that gets on your machine and starts encrypting everything and then asks for money when it's done. And if you don't pay it, then you don't get your files back and you have to format your driver, go back to a backup. What's interesting about Locky is that it's the highest volume, highest press thing that we've seen in a while, highest volume that we've ever seen in Office 365, so it's really interesting to talk about. There's also been some Locky used in some very advanced attacks with hospitals, and a lot of those got into the news where some ransomware got into systems and encrypted all files on hospital patient records, and ransoms of millions of dollars were paid, and it's the same kind of family of malware of Locky. So behind every attack, there's an attacker, and usually it's actually a group of attackers. When we really dig into this, we find that attackers are usually not working alone. And they're very, these people, I've never met them, but I assume that they're actually very smart and that they're very resourceful because they have these tools and they make these very effective attacks. But remember, your attacker is always trying to do something and they have a goal and they have a plan, right? So with ransomware, the goal is usually to steal money from victims, and depending on what kind of attack, it's different victims, obviously. And then their plan is to take control of their machine and infect all their files and ask for Bitcoin. They pick their targets, and again, we see all sorts of different attacks having different target selection. They set up some command and control. So when attackers set up these attacks, they don't just, you know, sign into a bunch of Hotmail accounts and hit send, send, send on a bunch of malware. They have a bunch of command and control infrastructure that's actually generating these new payloads. They also get control of what I call zombie computers. Some people call them botnets. And botnets are computers that are already infected with malware that are used to distribute the payload. So, the important thing for this is pretty much every email service, including ours, uses extensive reputation services and reputation lookups. Before we even look, and Jason's going to talk about this in a bit, but we use reputation, and you have to have a lot of fresh reputation at your fingertips, or good reputation, if you actually want to successfully distribute an attack. So that's what these zombie computers are. They're computers that have been infected, and that the attacker then takes control of to use them to distribute the malware. So they'll then hit a button, the malware campaign starts, some messages go out, but as soon as those messages get out, we start noticing, we author signatures for them, so they morph it, and then they update the payload and send some more messages out. And eventually, here's what the morphing looks like. So I took this picture from a recent Locky campaign because it really illustrates very well how the attack progresses. So they usually start big, and then it gets smaller over time, and the different colors on this chart represent the different payloads that are used to distribute the malware. And it's kind of hard to see, but it's about 5 minutes between each one of them. So it doesn't really give you, or anybody really, enough time to react individually to each one of them to author new signatures. And for those of you who are interested in the technicals of what really this is the SHA-256 hash of the JavaScript, or in this case, it was a macro that was distributing it. So the last step with these infections is eventually some mail will get through, not usually in Office 365 and other mails. And then so the macro or the JavaScript will run on that user's machine, and then it calls back out to the command and control and says, give me the real Locky. And the reason it does this, so we talked about how attackers try to morph their JavaScript and their macro so they can beat protection systems, because they don't want to put a big executable that knows how to encrypt your whole disk in email, because it's harder to morph that thing. They can't just change strings in a file. And it's easier for us to detect executables as sketchy. So every malware threat in email is pretty much something that downloads something else. And that's actually one of the important things to know about how these threats work, is that there's two goals, right? One is be agile and beat protection. And the second one is the thing that actually does the work. And that thing actually doesn't need to morph as much, because on clients, we're not uploading or we're not updating AV signatures as much as we update rules on protection systems in the cloud. So attackers know the environment that they're working in, and they put the effort where they need it, not where they don't. Anyways, the command and control will say, here's the payload, start encrypting, here's the URL to use, ask them for Bitcoin, tell them to put it in this account, and then all of the files are infected. And we've seen some versions of Locky that also go after OneDrive or OneDrive for Business content, so they'll find that folder that has your OneDrive stuff, they'll start encrypting it. Those changes will get put into OneDrive too. So when I say I think that these attackers are pretty smart, or they're pretty versatile, or they're pretty resourceful, it's because they have these, they know how to get to their victims. Now, the OneDrive for Business case is actually a really interesting one, because we have versioning, and SharePoint Online, which is the backbone for OneDrive for Business, is an append-only system, so we can always get your data back, but not all systems are like that. So that was the intro to the threat landscape, and I'm going to hand it over to Jason, who's going to talk about how we protect you from all this stuff in Advanced Threat Protection and Office 365. Here you go, Jason.
So thanks, Phil. Phil did a great job of telling you about the evolving threat landscape that's out there. The fact of the matter is, we're seeing more and more malware every month in O365, or attempting to be sent to O365. Year over year, it's up 600%. Fortunately, we've gotten better and better over that same period of time at stopping it. So I want to share with you today our entire EOP filtering pipeline that we use to stop malware, and then specifically we'll talk about our Advanced Threat Protection Suite, which is... Really, it's a suite of solutions specifically designed to stop new and evolving threats. And it consists of Safe Attachments and Safe Links. Safe Attachments is our sandboxing environment, where we take attachments and open them up inside of a hypervisor environment and look for behavioral changes in that environment, so we're able to detect malware that we've never seen before, that no signatures exist for. Safe Links is our time of click protection, where we do URL wrapping to check reputation on links at the last possible second after that link is clicked. But I'm also going to walk you through the entire pipeline and talk about how ATP fits into that pipeline. It really is an integral part built into EOP, and this is really important. We're able to share reputation and share verdicts between all of these systems to have one cohesive end-to-end solution that's really effective at stopping malware. So your mail comes from the internet, and the first thing that happens is it hits the edge. Now, Phil was talking about their botnets that send over and over again, send malicious messages. Well, we get reputation on those IPs that they're coming from. We get reputation on those senders. So we take the reputation that we have, we combine that with delivery heuristics, and we're able to drop an awful lot of content right at the edge before it even enters O365. And then once the mail comes in, we run it through our standard signature-based AV scanners. We have multiple scanning solutions in place, and this is really effective at knocking out a large percentage of the more commodity malware. So we actually shave off probably 80% of all malware here, but things that are heavily morphed, things where you've got a lot of different variants of the same malware coming out at the same time, tend to get through AV scanners. So after the scan is complete, we also do type blocking, and that's a new feature that's part of our malware policies now. So for type blocking, you can choose any executable I don't want to let into my organization. any script file I don't want to let into my organization. And there's a set of pre-configured, usually malicious files that you can easily enable. There's a list of about 90 options that you can choose from if there's something specific that's a threat to your organization. Or if you have something that's really unique using PowerShell, you can choose anything at all. So the second thing that we do is we look at the reputation of the individual files. Now this is a little bit different than the reputation that Phil was talking about earlier. In this case, we look at every scan result that we have throughout O365 through our entire security stack. So we've got the results for everything we've already looked at, and we look and see if there are matches for the specific files or even pieces of those files to let us know that something that's in your mail might be malicious. Then we continue on to what we call our heuristic clustering solution. We're constantly looking at delivery patterns across all of O365, and we see a ton of mail. And I think it's the most interesting mail out there. It's a bunch of enterprise mail that's hitting our service all the time. And just based on delivery patterns, we can tell when a mail is suspicious. And if we think it's suspicious, we'll take a sample from that cluster and send it into the same sandboxing environment that we use for safe attachments. Now, the way that the sandbox works, we've got multiple hypervisors that get spun up that have slightly different configurations, and we open up the file inside of those hypervisor environments, and they're instrumented to detect things happening to that environment. So, you know, we're looking at what's going on in memory. We're looking at what's being written to the registry. You know, did the hard drive get encrypted? That's an easy one to detect. We're looking for things getting pulled down off the network, connections to those C2 servers that Phil mentioned. We even look for attempts in the malware to trick us. So the malware will try to obfuscate itself, or they'll use evasion techniques to try to detect that they're inside of one of these sandboxing environments. Those are also great indicators to us that these files are malicious. So once we collect all those signals out of those hypervisor environments, it gets run through a machine learning model and a set of static rules with those inputs, and we can determine whether a file is just simply suspicious or whether it's really malicious. Then we've got safe attachments. Now, safe attachments uses the same sandbox environment, and this is just gonna be for folks that have an ATP SKU, or if you've got E5, it's included in E5. But what this does is it does that same sandboxing activity, but it does it for every single one of your attachments. So whether we think it's suspicious or whether we think it's clean, whether we think it's good, unless we have reputation from a previous detonation of that exact file, we will detonate your file. This is the absolute best protection that you can get. So once we're done with ATP, we actually now start looking at the body of the mail. So we'll look at the text in the mail, we'll look at URLs that are contained inside the mail. We run it through our anti-spam, phish, and spoof filters, where we can detect whether this email is part of a larger cluster of bad emails. And finally, once again, for folks that have ATP, or for folks that have an E5 subscription, we run our Safe Links solution, which once again is our time of click processing. So for every URL that's contained in the body of the mail, we wrap it inside of what we call a Safe Link. Now, when the Safe Link gets clicked, it actually routes to one of our servers where we check the absolute latest up to that second reputation of that URL. And only if that URL is safe do we redirect to the actual target server. So now the mail's arrived in the mailbox. But occasionally we'll find out from another O365 tenant, or even from another mail that's delivered into your organization, that that mail really is malicious. because those heuristic patterns are constantly changing, delivery patterns are constantly changing, we may detect it later. In that case, we can use something called ZAP, which is zero-hour auto purge, where we can go in and actually pluck that email back out of the inbox if it hasn't already been opened. So really what we have here is a defense in depth play. All mail has to travel through this anti-malware pipeline. And traditionally we've had AV engines, and AV engines will stop a lot of mail, but some gets through. So we've added a bunch of additional layers to this pipeline, which makes it really challenging for malicious actors to get mail through. And not only that, we're constantly fortifying each individual layer to make it more and more difficult, and we're adding entirely new layers all the time. Now, any solution, whether it's ours, somebody else's, any solution, is going to have false positives. So emails that we think are really suspicious but are actually good, and then false negatives, things that are malicious that get through. We are constantly working on each one of those layers to try to minimize false positives and false negatives, but we know there's always going to be some. And so we've got a set of solutions that we're working on to help you better manage when we have a false positive or a false negative. The first one is organization allow block. We're going to try to let you choose reputation on specific URLs and eventually files for your organization specifically. So if a phishing URL gets through and you know it's bad, you can set it as bad in your organization, and SafeLinks will immediately start blocking that for your entire organization. We're also going to add a malware quarantine. And so when we do make a mistake on an email and it's a false positive and you want to release it back to the user, or you want to release it to yourself to investigate it, you'll be able to do that out of malware quarantine. And finally, we're working on an enhanced O365 specific submission experience. So it'll be a lot easier for you to submit entire emails or files or URLs to us to let us know that that content either is bad and we missed it, or good and we accidentally stopped it. And we'll be able to give you feedback on what the status of your request is. So all those protections are going to help you deal with that more minimum set of false positives and false negatives that we're still producing. I want to take a second and talk about ATP versus third-party solutions. Who here already has ATP? Quite a few people in the crowd, that's great. And who here has a similar solution to ATP, but not? So just a few. So I know that it is a commitment to start using ATP. It's a commitment, both in terms of having to train your organization. There's slightly higher latency. There's a cost associated with it. So I'm sure you're going to look at not only Microsoft, but also third parties. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I firmly believe that the combination of EOP and ATP is the world-class solution for preventing malware from getting into your inbox. I went off and looked at a popular third-party filtering solution. So I looked at 192 of our tenants that I know have something else sitting in front of us. So their mail gets filtered by this third-party ATP solution first, then it gets sent to us. And this is the mail. There were 3.5 million mails over 90 days that made it past that third-party solution and made it to O365 where we caught it. I know that when you're doing these comparisons between the two products, it's often difficult. You have to put one in front of another. It's a challenge. The only thing that I ask you is if you are doing an evaluation, first of all, reach out to us and let's talk about it. But make sure you do it on real mail flow. Using synthetic fabricated malware just doesn't work, and it will give you bad results. ATP, as I said before, is 100% built into the EOP pipeline. that gives us a bunch of benefits in being able to catch malware better, but it's also a huge benefit for you because it literally takes less than a minute to turn on ATP. There's a safe attachments policy that has three sections. Click, 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 and you're done in less than a minute. Safe links, the same thing. We've had people reach out to us. They're literally in the middle of getting attacked, and we get ATP turned on for them and stop the attack. So I'm going to show you here soon how ATP protects more than just mail. So we're constantly looking at how we can expand protection to the rest of O365. And I'll share a little bit more about that with you in a minute. I believe that Microsoft is uniquely positioned to respond the best to these new and evolving threats. And the reason is we have the team that built the hypervisor that we're using to do the detection. We have the team that built the sandbox on top of the hypervisor. We have the Windows engineers that built the operating system that's trying to be attacked. We leverage all those guys. We have a bunch of virus researchers. We leverage all of their research. We also leverage the people that protect Microsoft from malware. And so we're able to provide a really rapid, unique response because we've got that full end-to-end coverage. So now I want to show you a couple of demos of some new features that we've got coming to ATP. Get logged in here. So the first is dynamic email delivery. Anytime that you have a sandboxing environment, it's going to take some time. You have to wait for the attachment to open up. You have to wait for it to do whatever it's going to do, download its secondary content, unpack that secondary content. In order to do a thorough job of sandboxing, there's just going to be some delay. And that delay, unfortunately, when you're sandboxing for email, turns into increased delivery time on your email. But now we've done what really only Microsoft can do because we have the mailbox as well. We've created a way to send an email, and while the email is getting delivered, we strip off the attachments, we send it to safe attachments for detonation, but then the actual body of the email itself, we allow to continue on and be delivered. So you can see, I immediately get the body, I know that the email was sent, got a status message here that lets the recipient know, hey, you've got some attachments, here's what they are, and they're in the process of being scanned. Now, once those attachments get scanned, we're gonna automatically reattach them to the email and flip it back to red. Or I'm sorry, flip it back to unread. So you'll be able to see that that email, that those attachments are ready for you. So the second thing I want to talk about is something called linked content detonation. We combined safe attachments and safe links together into a single feature where if you have content that's linked to in an email, so you've got a Word doc that's sitting on a web server and someone sends you a link to that Word doc, we're actually able to go download that content into that safe attachment sandboxing environment and detonate it just like we would an email attachment. So I'm gonna send an email now that's got two links in it, one that's good and one that's bad. And you can see what the experience is gonna be for users. The great thing about this is it also creates a low latency detonation experience for users as well. Because they can immediately, so here's the good link. They can immediately click on the link. And while that scan is in process, they're not only told, hey, we're performing a scan. We don't know if your content is safe yet or not. Give us a little bit more time. But you can also click here. This is admin configurable. You can click here and continue on to your content if you know it's safe and you don't want to wait for the scan. So the question was, what's latency typically look like in a sandboxing environment? Most of the time, it's less than 5 minutes. Now, it depends on what sort of attachment's getting sent. Some things take longer. There's a lot of secondary content that takes longer. One popular misconception, file size has nothing to do with it. A large file or a small file has essentially the same time inside of the sandbox. What does take longer is if there are lots of files attached to the email, because then we spin up, you know, multiple hypervisors for each one of those attachments. So that can take a little bit longer. Now, when you click on a link that's malicious, you get the block page that you're familiar with from Safe Links. And the great part about this feature is it integrates into the existing URL trace that you already are using for Safe Links. So when somebody clicks on a bad link, it'll show up in URL trace, and you can see if they chose to click through, and maybe there's some remediation activity that you need to do on their machine. Let me jump back to my deck. So I mentioned that we're in the process of trying to expand ATP to all of O365 to offer a full suite solution. Right now, we have ATP solutions just for mail. So for Exchange Online, for Exchange On-Premise, for hybrid environments, we've got you covered with ATP. But we're looking at ways that we can expand into the rest of O365, into SharePoint, into Yammer, into Skype for Business, to offer you that ATP protection everywhere. And we're also extending into the clients themselves, into Office clients, so into Word, Excel, PowerPoint. And that's actually what I want to show you next. We've got an experience for safe attachments detonation of SharePoint content I'd like to share with you. And then we're also going to look at safe links in Office clients. So this is a SharePoint site that I actually this morning uploaded some brand new, never before seen malware to. Conveniently labeled brand new malware so I didn't get confused and actually send it to somebody. So ATP has been crawling this site in the background and hopefully has detonated that file. And we can see what the experience would be for the person who uploaded the file once that detonation is complete. So you can see for the case of the person who uploaded the file, so since I was the one who uploaded it, I can still see the file, I can still get access to the file, but it'll give me this icon showing me that we found malicious content with ATP within SharePoint. And everybody else who accesses the same library who's not you isn't going to see this file at all. So we've extended similar protection into Word, Excel, and PowerPoint in the form of Safe Links protection. So for those of you who is using Safe Links in your email now, so quite a few people are. So you know that one of the side effects of Safe Links in email is we have to wrap those links. And that makes the links look a little bit different. If you have a plain text email, you can get some link explosion. The best part of this solution is it's completely transparent to the users. So you can see we've got a link here. If I edit that hyperlink, it looks no different than any other link, but we're still able to offer the same level of protection. So I've got a link here that looks like it's going to a benefits portal. But really, it's a malicious link, and so if I click on it, let me jump over to the web browser here. We're able to block the link in the web browser like we would for a safe link wrapped malicious link in an email without the user doing anything at all special to the link inside of Word, inside of Excel, and inside of PowerPoint. And once again, this is going to show up inside of URL trace, just like everything else, just like the links in your emails, so you can track them. Thanks, guys.
Let's go forward to that.
And now I'm going to hand back off to Phil to talk about threat intelligence.
I'm really excited to talk to you today about some of the work that we've done in this space. Threat intelligence is a really overloaded term. A lot of people use threat intelligence to mean different things, but the spirit behind all of the work that we've done in the threat intelligence space in Office 365 is that we have the largest enterprise email service in the world, and we have a bigger aperture on what attacks are going on in the world, and we wanted to do a few things. We wanted to take all of that data and distill it down into a way that it was useful for you as an IT admin or a CSO or just, you know, some security officer in your company. And I'll show you some examples of how we're doing that. But we want to take all that data and distill it down and also join it into your own organization's data to make it relevant, and then hook it up with other sources of insights and other cloud endpoints that we have at Microsoft and elsewhere, including Windows and including some analyst teams that author a bunch of content for us that I'll also show you. But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to do a few things. You know, we're trying to give you visibility, first of all. What are the threats that are hitting your organization, and what do you need to know to defend your organization against them? And this is an email. Well, we're starting with email and then extending elsewhere in the suite. We want to give you the tools to investigate potential breaches when they do happen, acknowledging that sometimes breaches do happen. We also want to generate some rich insights for you. You know, when I showed you the scatter plot earlier of all the different kinds of attacks and which ones were the easy ones that weren't that dangerous and which ones were the really dangerous ones, we wanted to generate these insights for you to say, yes, this is one that you should potentially care about in the sea of the tens of thousands of emails that you got in your organization today that are malicious. This is the one that you should care about. And we also want to use that data to drive drive policy, which we'll talk about in a minute. And the last thing is that we realize that there's this whole spectrum of customers. There's the small customers who don't really know what threat intel is and don't really have a big ecosystem to plug into, but then there's large enterprises that already have established processes around managing security incidents and managing alerts, and we want to plug into that and not try to create something new for you. And at the core of this, we talk a lot about the Microsoft Intelligent Security Graph this week, and there's a lot of slides that show you a picture kind of like this one. So I'm not going to spend too much time on these pictures. I'm going to get to products soon. But, you know, we like to talk about the unique positioning that we have in Office 365, and this also kind of ties back to that scatter plot I had at the start, is that we understand, you know, we have the Microsoft Office Graph and the Office Graph. We know which emails are flowing between which users in your organization. We have data loss prevention and other tagging solutions in our information protection suite, which know which content is sensitive, which content is, you know, financial or health related. We also know about threats in email. We also kind of know about attackers, and we know a little bit about them. We'll build some insights on attackers together in my demo. But by connecting to other graphs, by connecting to Windows, we can know if a machine's infected, and from that, we can infer that a user is infected. You know, if I deliver malware to a user, I don't necessarily know if that user is infected. If a user clicks on a phishing URL, I don't know if they type their password in. But if we see signs somewhere else that something suspicious is going on in either that user's account in Office 365, and we're actually not talking about it here, but we have this whole audit system in Office 365, and we're generating brand new insights on anomalies and usage, for instance, in Office 365, one of the dots on that scatter plot, we can actually combine all of these signals to drive smarter protection. So one of the scenarios that we think is really interesting that we aspire to get to, and I'll show you some of the building blocks that we've built towards it, are to use connected signals to drive smart policy. Like if we know that Gopi is infected, then we'll restrict his access to sensitive documents until he does a multi-factor auth or resets his password or something. That we can thoughtfully create some resistance, increase friction for attackers if he is compromised, but in a way that the user can self-recover without having to call a help desk. So we'll talk about investigation in the context of the demos. So this is the last pillar that we want to talk about. So we'll show you some new functionality that we're unveiling for the first time this week at Ignite, the Threat Dashboard and the Threat Explorer. So what you see here, this is our Security and Compliance Center. Have folks seen the Security and Compliance Center yet? For those of you who haven't seen it, this is the new place in Office 365 for all of our security and compliance related features. So here's where you'll find data loss prevention, encryption, spam settings, all of the audit, all of the e-discovery, all of the work that we have in the information protection team. We're rolling it all into this portal. And we've been very sensitive to not just create a portal that's full of pages that aren't interconnected with each other. The pages all revolve around policy and people and documents, which are fundamental concepts in Office 365. What I'm showing you in the threat dashboard at the start is a few things. The threat dashboard is meant to be a view for either a business decision maker or a security analyst or an IT generalist, and has a few things. So at the top, I say, what are the threats targeted at your organization? We start with 162,000 seen, 10,000 or so caught, 630 caught by the sandbox that Jason was talking about, 84 removed after delivery. Jason mentioned that we have 0-hour auto purge. If we find that something is malicious and we delivered it, we will proactively go and remove it for you. And we have those metrics for you, as well as an overall catch rate. We tell you about what the number one or the top threats are that we're seeing, this DonAuth, SwapFX, Nemocod. We'll talk about those in a sec. A map of where attacks are coming from. And this is actually really interesting to look at different attacks and see that they light up from different parts of the world. The next set of widgets are launch points for investigations. You know, we say here, we know that breaches can happen. Let us give you some tools and start deep dives into the Threat Explorer, which I'm going to show you soon. I mentioned earlier that the Security and Compliance Center centers around key concepts like users. And so here we have a list of top targeted users. And anywhere there's a user in the Security and Compliance Center, clicking on them will bring you up a card about that user and tell you where was their last login. It will show you a snapshot of their activity in Office 365. So we've made sure to plumb that right in. And the next set of widgets that we have show you trends in your organization. They also show you security trends that we've been observing. When Lockheed first showed up, my inbox got filled with emails from customers saying, oh my God, does Office 365 know about Lockheed? Do you know what Lockheed is? So when those kinds of things happen, or when there's new and emerging threats, we already have teams of analysts that are looking at them and that are actually authoring content about what those threats are, and we're bringing it to you here in context of a security investigation. And we'll look more at some Lockheed in a bit. And then we have some malware trends and some global stats on what we're doing, what we're seeing across the service. One of the challenges that we also had with the set of tools that I'm showing you now is we wanted to have a smooth transition, both for an IT generalist on a smaller organization who's not necessarily a security expert, but also have tools that are powerful enough that someone who's deep into security could actually get some good use out of them. So now I'm going to switch over to the Threat Explorer, where a lot of these investigation scenarios get carried out. So we have a few task-oriented flows that we came up with that the Threat Explorer enables. This first view that you get when you show up in the Threat Explorer is a view of the malware over the last month in your organization. And one of the big challenges that we had was how do we actually cluster messages in a meaningful way so that you can say, oh, that message I got today is similar to the one that I got yesterday, given that attackers are morphing their campaigns so quickly. What I've taken here is I've actually taken the Microsoft data. So I took all of the Microsoft threat data. We have a bunch of anonymized streams. I took those streams and I kept the threat data intact and just replaced it with placeholder names. So this is actually what we've seen in Microsoft, so about 15,000 a day of various colors. And we show you what are the top threats and top users, and I'll get into that. But I said earlier that we wanted to make this task-oriented for investigation. So if I want to look at what's happened in a specific week instead of all month, I can actually change the date range to that time range that I'm interested in. And before, you can kind of see the three humps for the 3 weeks. Now what you see is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different humps for the different days of the week. It shows you attackers work during their daytime. If you also look at the times that attacks happen, it's interesting that sometimes day after day after day, the same one will happen at the same time. And you can kind of see that with the yellow one, and we'll look at that in a sec. But we've clustered these by malware family on the delivery thing. So earlier I was talking about how the first stage is always either JavaScript or usually a JavaScript or a macro. And we have names that we give to different kinds of one of those, and that's the names that you see across the top and down the side. But we realize that no one really knows what Nemukad is, and we don't expect you to know what Nemukad is. So if you want to know more about any of these threats, you can click into them, and we have a write-up on what is, you know, what is this Nemukad? Oh, it's a script-based family. It says here, usually downloads credential stealers or ransomware. So now we've gone from, you know, seeing mails to categorizing them to giving them context. I'm also showing you a list of all of the messages that were Nemukad in your organization and what we did with them in terms of the protection. What's really cool here too is that we've partnered with some analysts. So we have a ton of malware and threat analysts at Microsoft, and they've been working together to author this content. But not only that, but create relationships between different types of attacks. So they know that Nemukad often downloads Locky ransomware specifically, so they'll show you a Locky article here. So if you want to know, you know, what is this Nemukad? Oh, it's Locky, and here's an article from the Microsoft Threat Intelligence team on what Locky is, and there's a lot of small text, but it says it's ransomware, and it asks for between 0.5 and 2 bitcoins, which is $200 to $800 or so. We had one of these articles about 2 days after Locky first showed up. So Locky first showed up around February 16th, and within a very short period of time, analysts turned around. It's kind of like for these big attacks, everyone on the internet kind of turns around and produces content around the same time. So I want to show you now some of the insights that we can get out of this data. So from here, we can see, all right, there's every day. I've clustered the campaigns into attacks. And I think that you can actually start to believe me when I say clustering by malware family is a very useful way to look at this data, because you can see the different attacks that only happen on one day or get carried through from one day to the next. We also have different pivots on here. So I showed you the ability to filter or to change the time range. But I could also say, oh, now show me all malware by sender domain or by sender IP. And that would change the colors of the charts to show you by sender domain. I want to zoom in on one that was really interesting when I was looking at it earlier, this Madiba family. So if I look at Madiba, and Madiba is yellow on there, but I'm going to just add a filter for Madiba. What you see here is, okay, so there's some Madiba on the 12th and the 13th. I'm actually going to zoom out a little bit more. I've got to reset this. So you can see that the Madiba attacks have also been happening day after day after day. But this is not really insightful yet. It's just telling you the attacks have happened. If I go then and I switch a pivot from malware family, it's going to let me, there it is, to sender domain. And this is early code. We still have a bug where it resets the malware family. I'll have to change that back. But remember, we're diving in on Madiba now and switching to sender domain instead of malware family. I'll put the filter back on for Madiba. So now you can see each day used a different sender domain. If I hover over this one is 85 Bakery Cafe, this one's Meaty Restaurant, this one over here is Luciano Restaurant. So you can see that these attacks are probably related to each other. The attacker is using some lure that involves restaurants. And again, this is real data that we've seen in the Microsoft tenant. What's interesting about this pink one is it's not. It's Microsoft.com. So the attacker in this middle one is impersonating Microsoft accounts when it's distributing the malware, so it might actually be a different attacker using the same distribution technology as the other guy. Or it could be the same attacker trying some new tactic. But what's interesting about this, I looked at these restaurants, I was wondering, you know, what's the relationship between the different parts of this attack? It's something that, as threat analysts, we do all the time, try to find the relationships between things. And I looked this one up, so it was meatyrestaurant.net. And if you go to this restaurant's website, at least yesterday it was there, what you'll see here, there's this text at the bottom, "Hello visitors, we'd like to let you know that our owner's email was hacked and used to send spam." So it's you know, interesting context on this mail that it's got through. The next thing I want to show you is how we tie in the other signals that we have from things like zero-hour auto-purge. So another filter that we've exposed on here is, what is the protection status? And if I go to delivered, right now that includes zero-hour auto-purge mail, mails that we remove from the mailbox after the fact, and you can see we went from hundreds of mails down to 4, so you can actually understand, okay, I wasn't very exposed in my organization. And if you look at the sender domains, Microsoft, you know, something global, cleaning. None of these are restaurants. So that restaurant attack didn't actually make it through. It's this other one that made it through in the Madiba family. So we've just kind of gone from some flow of looking at everything to looking at one attack and understanding that it's the restaurant one. So if the next day you get some report from some user that says, oh, I got this sketchy email with the restaurant thing, then you know it's probably like the other ones. And you start to build this knowledge yourself about what are the attacks that are coming into your organization. The next thing I want to show you on here is another investigation scenario where that we believe almost everyone has. Who has a help desk today that you tell users, send me a sketchy email if it gets in your inbox? Yeah, a lot of people have that. And how many people think that everyone submits all the sketchy mail they see? Nobody, right? So there's this other thing that, okay, I know someone got compromised. I want to find out who else is at risk. So we have a search experience here. This new data that powers the Threat Explorer and the Threat Dashboard, and in fact, all of the new insights that we have in Office 365, we've built this very powerful platform that includes full text search capability. And I'm going to search for a user, Gopi, who self-reported through one of these tools. And now you can see here's all the messages that were targeted at Gopi over some period of time. And if I look at the list of messages, I can actually see, okay, there's a bunch of messages here. Most were blocked, and the last one was delivered. So this is probably the one that he's self-reporting about. But now you have the question, okay, who else is at risk? It looks like it was on the 16th. So we could say, okay, well, I don't want to search for Gopi anymore. What is this thing? This is Fabricam, but the malware family in this case, we'll see what the malware family is. Oh, look, it's SwabFex. SwabFex, we haven't talked about it, but you could learn what it is by clicking through the other way. SwabFex is also a downloader of ransomware. And now I want to see, all right, well, who else got SwabFex on the 16th? And I can clear the Gopi filter and add on a SwabFex filter. It was SwabFex C. And see, okay, here's all the SwabFex in my organization. I want to see all the SwabFex that got through because it's a useful clustering tactic. Show me only the delivered SwabFex, and here you go, a handful of mail from thousands that are actually relevant for your investigation. So the real power behind this experience is to create these investigation flows that when we talk to customers, you told us that you were already doing them, or at least trying to do them, but give you the power of all of the data that we have in Office 365 to back it up. But from day one, back when we were still drawing this stuff on a napkin, before we'd built any code, we started talking with the Windows team, realizing that we are very Office 365 centric, but we exist in an ecosystem where you have other tools. I mentioned earlier incident response tools, security incident management systems, but there's also endpoints, network devices, and everything else. And we realized that we would actually be able to create a very powerful solution if we partnered first with Windows and created investigation solutions that flowed between machines and accounts in Office 365. So the Windows guys have talked about this a lot this week. It's the Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. Some of you might have seen it in the keynote yesterday. But what's really interesting about this is that it's kind of like a, they would probably not like me describing it this way, but I think of it as a distributed sandbox where there's no time limits and attackers can't actually try to fool their payload to not get caught. They look for behavioral signs of something sketchy happening on a machine, and then they'll create alerts like the ones on the screen. And I realize they're really small. Let me zoom in a little bit. So that dark red one, the severe one, is NeuroBlaze attack detected. NeuroBlaze is an advanced adversary that we have a history of and we know what they're doing. But we also have a bunch of other behaviors on the machine, including we think that Office 365 did something sketchy or some Office client. And Windows is able to track it down to just one file that they think started the attack, newopportunity.doc. So we've created this investigation flow between Office 365 and Windows that they can even ask us, hey, Office 365, have you seen this file in email? And if we click through to Office 365, we can show who the intended targets were. So I'm opening up the Threat Explorer. This is the same Threat Explorer that I just showed you, but now it's filtered down to what is to that file. And now you can see here are the victims that were intended to get the file. We actually have a link back to the machine if you want to start from Office 365 Advanced Threat Protection. And then we'll tell you, oh, look, we blocked most of them. And that's another thing that's really powerful about Office 365 and the Microsoft Intelligent Security Graph, which we keep plugging, is that we do have this signal exchange between Windows and Office 365 and other properties at Microsoft so we can have timely threat intel that we apply on your behalf in a useful way. So this was the last part of the threat intel demo, which I think is a very powerful set of new tools that we're going to be rolling out starting into preview late this year and early next year, early to mid next year, when you'll start to see this stuff roll out into Office 365. Okay, now I want to wrap up. We're going to have a few minutes for questions, and we have some cool swag to give you. Yeah. So the question was, we talked about mail or threats coming from the internet into Office 365. What about internal threats? What do you guys do about those if, you know, if some phishing campaign comes in and gets forwarded inside the organization? Or one account gets compromised. So anti-malware filtering happens regardless of whether the mail is coming from the internet or is going within the organization. And we actually have a bunch of policies that you can set that will let you turn on or off certain parts of the protection for intra-organization mail. And if you want some more details on what are the nitty-gritty details, we can talk about that afterwards. But we have a rich configuration set that lets you control most of that. Let's just wrap this up, and then we'll take some questions. So I just want to summarize what we talked about. So we talked about the kinds of threats we had, the protection that we have with ATP, how we're extending ATP to not just be an email solution, but to really be a file and URL solution applied across Office 365, and then some of the new reports and threat intel that we're surfacing. And now we're happy to take some questions while I have this slide up, if you guys want to take a picture of it to see what else is going on this week at Ignite. And here, we have these USB battery chargers. Here, I'll give that to you. Thanks for asking the question. Malware free. You know, earlier Jason and I were working on the deck. Jason and I each have a folder on our computer. It's called malware samples. And you guys have these guys in your organization that you get an alert and you find it in a thing called malware samples. And Jason has a USB stick full of malware samples. And so we plugged them into this before handing them out. Yeah, question here.
It's actually helpful in a lot of cases. The ones that try to look for, to determine that they're in a virtual environment, the things that they look for to determine that they are in a virtual environment are things that we can key off of to tell that they're suspicious. Yeah. So it's a pretty good tell for us. One example, one thing that's popular to do is they'll actually geolocate the IP and try to figure out if they're in a Microsoft data center or another provider's data center. But when they go off and they do that lookup, we can see that they're doing that lookup and it's obvious. So. Yeah. It's a good flag for us.
Do you want a USB battery? All right. There we go. Over here?
So we do have we have features in the compliance center that will allow you to go off and find specific mails by specific criteria and purposely delete them. Our goal is always to have already done that for you.
Yeah, but Jason mentioned that earlier, that if you do have a URL that you know is bad, Jason mentioned a customer-controlled allow block list that you can just add that URL to that list after the fact.
Yeah, the feature name, thank you, Rudy, is Search and Destroy.
All right, let's go over to this side of the room.
Yeah, how much of this is currently available versus what's going to be available?
Do you want to talk to the ATP stuff?
Yeah, so the demos...
The question was, when is this stuff available? What's available now?
So it depends. So we've, obviously, the everything that we showed you in demos is built. In the case of dynamic delivery and linked content detonation, those are in the process of deploying now, so you'll see those this fall. While we've got a solution deployed for SharePoint, that could be a little bit longer before it lights up, and I would expect also kind of spring timeframe to see the Office clients light up.
And for the, I mentioned the threat intel stuff, preview late this year, early next year, mid next year rollout.
Yes, yeah, the question was, is ATP available for all plans? It is, it's available as an add-on SKU, so you can add it onto any plan, whether it's, you know, if you're hosted, if you're in a hybrid configuration, if you've got just on-premise mailboxes, you can still run ATP. Only caveat to that, to run something like have Zap work, to have dynamic email delivery work, those have to be hosted mailboxes. Because we're able to do that because we have access to the mailbox.
We'll go back over here now. Sorry. Back or second last row or third last row? Yeah, you. So the question is, do we have a way to look at user activity like suspicious logons to drive alerts? And the answer is yes. We actually didn't talk about them here. Azure Active Directory already has some stuff. We have a new thing called Advanced Security Management, which has a bunch of functionality around specifically those things that you mentioned, suspicious logins and impossible travel. Yeah, that's not something that we have automated actions for, but we've actually built the framework to start doing some of that. So if you look at some of the other topics that we have this week around data loss prevention, where we talk about reacting to finding new sensitive information, we plan on extending that policy engine to also ingest signals from threats and drive actions like notify to force a password reset or notify to force a multi-factor auth. Notify the end user that we think they might be compromised. You know, these are all things that are possible. And we have the framework for it, and we're just starting to work through those scenarios. All right, let's go back over here.
So yeah, ATP needs to be licensed per user, but you don't need to assign those licenses per user. So, and that allows really rapid deployment, and it allows deployment for on-premise scenarios where you may not have your directory in the cloud.
We'll go back over here. Yeah, we haven't done that work yet, but we have this infrastructure. Have you heard of them? So the question was, can I use the threat intel data on my on-premises security incident management systems, security event management teams? And we've started piping the data into the UI first, but we have a model of using what we call the management activity API, which creates bulk files of activities, and we can form the threat data into the activity log API format. And a bunch of popular SIEMs and other investigation tools have already started integrating with it. So our goal is to actually make it fairly easy for you to consume it once we've done the work for it to light up. What's that? Yeah, so the question is, can I use signals from my ecosystem to drive policy in Office 365? And that's something that we aren't as advanced on, but it's something that we're thinking about. Take one more over here.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand. Yep. And this is longer term past Word, PowerPoint, Excel. Sorry. The question was, is there going to be the ability to have safe links inside of Outlook that aren't wrapped? definitely something that we're looking at. It's going to be past that Word, Excel, PowerPoint integration. But yeah, look for it. Look for it in the future. We definitely, we know the concern.
Got one more over here. Oh, sorry. I keep skipping the middle. I'll come to you next.
I'm sorry, the question was, do we have time of click analysis of links embedded in emails? Yes, that's the Safe Links feature does that. That's the link wrapping that we do in emails for Safe Links. So yeah, every good or bad, they all get wrapped. Most of the time it's completely seamless to the end user. When they click on the link, they get redirected to our server where we check reputation of the target link, and only if it's safe do we then redirect. That's right. If they forward the mail, it doesn't matter. If it's a year from now or 5 years from now, they click on the link and we've got bad reputation for that URL, they're going to get protected.
Middle? Who was I skipping here? We're having a hard time hearing you up here. And there's some mics up here, but I guess Jason will go closer.
There are mics where? Yeah, so the question was on SafeLinks. On that block screen or the scan in progress screen, there's a link at the bottom that allows the end user to bypass our decision and go to the content anyway. 100% admin configurable. So if you decide you don't want them to have that option, they don't have that option. And if you do have that option and they choose to click on it, you explicitly see that in URL trace. You can tell who clicked on it if it turned out to be malicious and you allowed the click through. Yeah, so that was the reputation piece that I talked about.
Oh,
The question was, how far down the road are we for applying what we learned through through Safe Attachment sandboxing to the entire O365 ecosystem? And we do. We leverage reputation from every file that enters one of our sandboxing environments, whether it be because of ATP or because we sent it there because it was part of a suspicious cluster. So then we leverage that for everybody, whether they have ATP or not. Minutes. Yeah.
All right, well, thanks a lot for coming out today. It was our pleasure to share all of this information with you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Great questions.